Hi, everybody. Again, my name is Robin Dewey, and I'm with the Labor Occupational Health Program, which is a community service program that's part of the University of California, Berkeley's School of Public Health. And I work, what LOHP does is workplace health and safety education. We have a number of different either federally or state-funded or private foundation-funded projects, working with all kinds of different types of workers and all kinds of industries. I work on a number of projects, but one of the projects that I'm most close to has to do with trying to get occupational safety and health education for people with developmental disabilities. And this is a personal issue for me because I have an adult son with autism, and I also manage our local Special Olympics team. So this is a community I spend a lot of time with. And so what, you're supposed to say this, no relationships to disclose. I forgot about that. So I want to start by giving just a little bit of background and why we're concerned about this as an issue. And I want to begin by explaining my point of view, which is that I think it's really, really important for people with disabilities to be working. And the fact that the employment rate is only about 30% is a problem. And I think that the various government and private efforts to remedy this issue are really, really important, including school transition programs, high school transition programs. Very, very important. But it's also important to know that the places where most people with developmental disabilities are working involve very hazardous tasks. And what's also not happening is health and safety training. And that's actually pretty lacking in this country anyway for all workers. But after doing a needs assessment a few years ago to figure out kind of what the situation is for workers with developmental disabilities, it's astoundingly lacking. And when it does happen, it's basically a job coach or a supervisor saying, do this, don't do that, which doesn't really lead to somebody knowing what to do if the situation changes and being able to transfer those skills. And so this is something that at LOHP we tried to change. The other thing that happens is that job coaches and the people working closely with people with developmental disabilities typically don't have health and safety training either. So where are folks with disabilities working, particularly those, I'm specifically talking about people with intellectual disabilities. They're working in a variety of settings, and including conventional, the conventional labor markets, or for example, bagging in grocery stores, et cetera. But they also work in facility-based settings, including sort of sheltered workshop situations. These are nonprofit, community-based facilities, such as Goodwill Industries, Pride Industries, Easter Sills, et cetera, some smaller as well. And they're doing a variety of tasks, industrial laundry, making varieties of different products, including pallets and et cetera, doing apparel manufacturing. You see on the left, these folks are making American flags. A lot of assembly and a lot of recycling, grounds maintenance, and a lot of janitorial work. So for example, a lot of the federal buildings around the country are being cleaned by crews of people with disabilities. These jobs are hazardous, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics that keeps track of injury rates has found that in private industry in general, among all workers, the rate of injury is 4.4 injured workers for every 100 workers per year. The rate of injury among folks working in sheltered workshops is almost twice that. It's about 7.3, and I think although as we'll see, people bring special risk factors to these jobs. I think the main reason why the injury rates are so high is because these are hazardous jobs. There are lots of repetitive movement, et cetera. So as I say, I think it's important to recognize that there are special risk factors. These people, just like anybody else who's a vulnerable worker, people who speak a different language, young workers, et cetera, do bring special risk factors, and these can affect health and safety. And so it's very important that we create workplaces that are safe for our most vulnerable workers, in which case they'll be presumably safer for everybody as well. So in an effort to address the problem of not having health and safety training, particularly health and safety training that's tailored and effective for this population, we developed a curriculum that's a 4-hour curriculum that's for use in with the supported employment agencies as well as employers that want to start off with sort of a basic health and safety training and then tailor it to the individual needs of the workplace. And the concept behind this curriculum is that it teaches the same basic occupational safety and health skills that all workers need when they go into the workplace. You need to know how to identify the hazards that can hurt you or make you sick or harm your mental health. You need to know that hazards can be controlled and how you can protect yourself from injury and illness. You need to know what to do if an emergency happens, if something unexpected or the situation changes in some ways. You need to know what to do, and the more you can practice that ahead of time, the less likely you are to get hurt. And then finally, you need the skill of being able to speak up when there's a problem. And that, I think, is one of the hardest things for everybody to do, but particularly for this population. And so this curriculum involves a lot of participatory activities and a lot of time for practice, et cetera. And I'm just going to run through really quickly some of these activities so you have sort of a sense. So to address the objective of understanding job hazards, looking for job hazards, we have a series of illustrations that help people do that, where they work either as a large group or individually as with handouts to circle the hazards or identify the hazards they see in a variety of different workplaces. So we have a grocery store, we have a restaurant, we have ground maintenance, and we have a warehouse. And we're working on an industrial laundry illustration as well. And the idea is to use these illustrations so that we can a little bit exaggerate them so they're easy to pick out. The idea being to practice over and over again different kinds of workplaces so you can develop that skill of going into any workplace and seeing where the hazards are. We do spend some extra time on chemicals and noise and stress, some very specific hazards that people may run into, as well as ergonomic hazards. And ergonomic hazards account for about 30 to 40% of the injuries that are happening everywhere, including in these workplaces, because of the extensive repetitive motions and the lifting involved, et cetera. So we spend a lot of time and some extra activities on this, including talking about safe lifting. And then we turn to how do you solve health and safety problems. And we do this through a series of illustrations where somebody is being injured and we talk about how could you have prevented that. What are all the ways to prevent that injury from happening? And then the next activity has to do with meeting the objective of teaching people about emergencies on the job. And there are a couple of activities, but one of the main ones is this board game that they play called Disaster Blaster, where through the process of playing and answering questions, if they didn't already know how to protect themselves in a particular emergency, they learn it playing the game. And then finally, there's a couple of activities to address the speaking up objective. One is to look at a situation where somebody got in trouble because of spilling chemicals and talk about what her rights are on the job and give her advice about what she could say in that situation. And then finally, there's a series of little mini role plays to practice kind of rescue phrases if something comes up and you don't know what to say. And so if you practice ahead of time in a safe environment, if somebody's asking you to work too fast or something like that, or you're suffering an injury and or don't know what to say about it, practice sort of doing that ahead of time. So where's the curriculum being used? There are basically three different settings. The first one is at Walgreens. I've been working with Walgreens to introduce this curriculum into their new distribution centers. And I don't know if you're familiar with what Walgreens is doing, but thanks to the efforts of their vice president, who's in charge of their distribution centers nationally, they have made a commitment to hire a third to 40% of their workforce in those distribution centers from the population of people with variety of different kinds of disabilities. And as part of that effort, they do it when there's a new distribution center that's set up. And those distribution centers are highly automated and they've managed to engineer out a lot of the hazards as a result of setting up these new distribution centers. They recruit people with disabilities into first a training center where they learn how to do those jobs, and then once they're ready to move into the regular distribution center, they work alongside people without disabilities for the same pay and same benefits. So this curriculum is being used in their training centers, and there are two new training centers now, one in Anderson, South Carolina, and the other in Windsor, Connecticut, and there'll be more coming. It's also being used through the NISH affiliated community rehabilitation programs, the sheltered workshops, sheltered employment agencies that are under the umbrella of NISH, which used to stand for the National Industries for the Severely Handicapped, but that's not, they don't say the whole name anymore. So training for the employers that are hiring people, which accounts for the majority of people with severe disabilities in this country, this is where they're working. They're working in these settings. And so new NISH has started to introduce this curriculum to their members so that they can then go back and teach it to their employees. And then finally, it's being used in some high school transition programs as part of another project we have that targets young workers. And there are some adapted activities in our Youth at Work curriculum that are used. So in summary, I just want to say very quickly that this is a really important effort because where people are working are hazardous jobs. And rather than try and change the individual behavior of the workers in those jobs, it's much more effective and important to change the work environment so that you create a much safer workplace in the same way that I think Walgreens has sort of taken a lead to do that. But training is also really important so people know what to do and can speak up. Finally, I just want to reiterate my feeling that individuals with developmental disabilities absolutely need job opportunities as well as meaningful health and safety training. So, have I gone okay on my time? Okay. Thank you.
We do have time for one or two quick questions if anybody. Can you come to the speaker or to the microphone, sorry?
I actually have some brochures I can hand you out. We basically are having to charge just for cost. It's $25 because it's in color. That's why it's a little expensive. So I can have brochures ready for people.
How well has this program worked for transition age youth and young adults? Because we are in charge of evaluation of 60 transition sites in New York State. It is a VR-funded initiative. And the major push is to help young people with disabilities, especially those with developmental disabilities, to obtain employment following their graduation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what's your experience in terms of working with transition age youth and adults using this curriculum?
Are you working in a high school transition program in
Yes.
New York State? Because through another LOHP program, our Young Worker Program, we've been working with New York State to try and get our Youth at Work Talking Safety curriculum into the high schools. And so that includes a lot of these activities that are in the Staying Safe at Work curriculum. And the Youth at Work Talking Safety curriculum has been pretty extensively evaluated by NIOSH, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, in 10 states. And I can't remember whether New York was one of those states. But they did find that if people actually taught the whole curriculum, it was really pretty effective. And I piloted this program a few times with individuals with disabilities, and it seemed to be effective. I mean, people were engaged, they were, finding the answers in terms of being able to identify hazards, et cetera. And again, I think the difference is that it's a participatory curriculum. It's not just talking to people, it's not just showing videos, et cetera. It's eliciting ideas and information from people. So, yeah, I would encourage you to get in touch with us if you don't have that other one.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.